What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the R&D Wrestling Podcast. I'm Ryan Brower.
And I'm DJ Gruber. And today, guys, we will be discussing with you our top five factions.
That's right. And then, as always, going over some current events topics as well. We are coming off the back, you guys, of an incredible pay-per-view that AEW just put on in AEW All In. And I had the chance to watch the show live as it happened. I know, DJ, you've seen many of the highlights from the show.
Yes, so I have.
Is there anything in particular that you want to talk about that really stood out to you?
Just that AEW, you know, once again took the weekend. Like, I'm not trying to rip on any of the other shows. They were good. But AEW dominated the weekend, and I am not going to hold back on that. They dominated from pre-show to the end. I will say it was probably one of the better pay-per-views of the year.
Looking up and down the card, like that Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland versus Young Bucks tag match, one of my favorite matches of the year. By the end of that one, I thought the final three matches on the show were just as equally as good. The Toni Storm Mercedes Moné match, I thought Toni Storm getting the victory, I thought was the right decision there. Okada versus Omega 5 is an interesting one. So I actually, DJ, something I haven't told you yet, but one thing I did do, like in the week or two leading up to All In, is I bought New Japan World, which is New Japan's streaming service, their little subscription thing for $9.99 a month. And I did that because I wanted to be able to watch the other Okada Omega matches, because the only one that I ever had seen in full was the first one. And so I went back and I watched all four of them, and they, like, oh my gosh, truly are legendary matches. Some of the greatest matches of all time. I truly believe that. Going into that fifth match, I knew the story. I knew everything that they were trying to do. And the big thing was, like, Kenny Omega, that one wing angel, it's so well protected that not even Okada has ever kicked out of it.
Nope.
And that played into that match that they did at All In, because what happened? Kenny hit the one wing angel, and Don Callis, who had provided English commentary for every single one of those Okada Omega matches, who
knows
very well that Okada was never going to kick out of that move, pulls the referee out. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. I'm like, hey, that's so good.
You know, Don Callis did his homework and has watched many of those matches. He knew what was up.
He knew what was up, and he knew that Okada wasn't kicking out. So what did he do? He had to get involved. And then eventually it led to Okada getting the victory and becoming the unified champion, the first ever unified champion, which Tony Khan said that they're going to follow continental rules for that championship going forward now, where, like, there can't be any outside interference or things like that.
Okay.
And then you've got Hangman versus Mox, which, oh, thank goodness my man won, and it was the right decision, and it needed to happen, and there was no other way of that ending besides Hangman, my guy, becoming the world champion. I love it. Two-time world champion.
I watched them highlights, and I'm just like, oh gosh, if Hangman does not win here, I'm going to be mad. Because, you know, it has happened before, you know, when someone was about to win, and next thing you know, Moxley wins. But, man, Hangman Page, you can always count on him to clutch it up, man. Mr. Clutch.
And then with all the interference spots in that match as well, the people that came down to help Hangman, just, it was good. It was great.
It was such an awesome match. Like, we even had a couple guys return we haven't saw in, like, a couple months, like Darby Allin, Bryan Danielson. Like, bro, AEW just keeps getting better and better as the year goes on, man.
This has been, in all honesty, when this year is said and done, this might be AEW's best year. In all honesty, this year they have been firing on all cylinders. The crowds are loving the shows again and getting back into them the way that they should be. It feels like the perception online again is that people are really starting to enjoy AEW again. And it's just, as someone who's been a fan of this company since day one and has been with them through all of the ups and all of the downs, it is just so great to see.
Oh, yeah, it is. Like, dude, it's nice to see them that, you know, they're doing what they want to do, you know, not doing what this company or that company's doing. They're doing what they're doing best. And that is something awesome to see as a wrestling fan. You know, they're doing this to the fans. They're doing this for their stars. Like, they're making good pushes. They're making decent booking, better booking than probably last year. And because of that, they've had good pay-per-view after good pay-per-view this year so far.
Unfortunately, it wasn't all great news coming out of AEW All In. DJ, I know you wanted to touch this one, so take the floor.
Adam Cole, baby. So I did not know how he got hurt, so I kind of want you to talk about that, but I do know that Dustin Rhodes is champion, and, you know, respect to him. Good for him, but I fear the worst for Adam Cole, because I did see on the highlights that he may have to consider retirement now.
So according to, I believe, Fightful reported it, that it's a concussion injury is what he's dealing with right now. And to the severity of which this is going to affect Adam Cole, like, we don't know. And I remember there were reports saying that he wanted to go out there and just announce his retirement, like, right there and then. Thankfully, people talked him out of it, as he just wasn't going to be in the proper headspace to do that. So he kind of went out there and kind of left it, like, open-ended as far as, like, what his career might become at this point. It's really unfortunate. And I remember telling the boys this when I was, you know, watching the pay-per-view with them. It was like, I feel like we just got Adam Cole back. We just got him back from that leg injury that he had, you know, that affected
him
for over a year. And it felt like we just got him back, and now he's gone again. So it's really unfortunate. If this is the end of Adam Cole's career, like, what a career he's had. He's got nothing to, you know, nothing to be ashamed of. He has done so much for the wrestling business. And, you know, if he wants to spend the rest of his days, you know, being the Chugs online, doing his live video game live streams and stuff, people are going to follow him and people are going to support him, because he's such a great dude. Everyone
really
loves him.
Is. Yeah. I will say, I'm going to be a little salty here. I wanted to see him be world champion before he did get to this point, but
yeah,
you know, we can't have everything. I will follow him on YouTube, because he is an awesome gamer and he's, like you said, a great guy.
I think if all was set and done correctly the first time, that, like, right before the first injury, I think he was going to become AEW World Champion in 2023. Just with, like, that MJF storyline, it felt like it was only a matter of time before they gave it to him. But then once that injury happened, it was like, well, plans fell through, and now things have gone a different direction. Swerve's gotten really hot. We're going with him. And yeah, it just, that's how quickly things can change in the wrestling business. If I'm going to circle it back real quick to the TNT title picture right now, and Dustin Rhodes being the new TNT champion. So it's funny, because, like, it definitely surprised me, right? I thought that, well, if Kyle Fletcher wasn't winning before the Adam Cole match, he sure as heck is winning now.
Obviously.
They decided to go in a different direction. And the more I thought about it, I'm like, you know what? I think this was actually the right move. And there's a couple reasons why. The first of which, they're in Texas. They give Dustin that moment. He gets to win an AEW singles title. You know, I don't think he's got too many of those left, you know, to be doing. Yeah. So
wait, is this his first title in AEW?
I think so. Well, he's got the two Ring of Honor titles. We were joking around, Dustin's going to become three champions. And then sure enough, he did. So Dustin Rhodes, between AEW and Ring of Honor, has three different championships right now. It's freaking great. I'm like, forget the Mercedes belt collector storyline. Let's get the Dustin belt story going here. Like, let's go. I think if we're going to crown Kyle Fletcher, and I think that was 100% the original goal with the Adam Cole match, is like, we're going to have him beat Adam Cole. We're going to define him as, like, the next guy, you know, that could be a future world champion. But I don't think now was the right time to do it off of a vacant title. I think we can get it maybe where Kyle Fletcher beats Dustin for that title, or maybe they decide to move Kyle Fletcher up into the heavyweight division without the TNT title. I don't know, but I'm not concerned about Kyle Fletcher. I'm really not. I think he's got all the potential in the world. I think he's showing it right now. Like, if people say, oh, he's the future, like, no, I think he's showing it right now that he can be a guy, he can be a top player. So I'm not concerned about it. He's going to get his due. He's going to get his moment. And it, I think, sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm. Hey, just wait. Him and Josh Alexander are going to win the tag champs from Hurtson again.
Maybe they put him in another tag team. Who knows?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we ain't done yet, DJ, because we got to talk about another big story that happened over the weekend with Saturday night's main event and the retirement of one Goldberg.
I forgot about that. Thank you. I'm so ready to go, man.
I actually want to pull up a video to start us out here that pretty much sparked this whole thing. Ariel Helwani, that son of a gun, he knows what he's doing when it comes to asking the questions to get people to talk and to maybe say things that they probably shouldn't be saying, but yet again, they just will.
Okay, first off, not a shocker. You know, it was NBC was going to cut it off no matter what. And, you know, Saturday Night Main Event, I'm just going to say this. It's the filler pay-per-view. I don't expect anything good from it. But, you know, to see Goldberg get his butt kicked one more time, it was exciting to say the least.
Yeah, I think, don't get me wrong. So, and I think you guys know, because I've talked about it many times before, that like I've been going back and I've been watching through Nitro. I've slowed down a little bit lately, but I'm about midway through 98. And my goodness, Goldberg is so over right now. Like the dude's like one of the most popular guys there as like the WCW US champion. He's on this massive undefeated run. And yeah, like dude was the man. Like there was a reason why everybody loved him. I think the problem was that was also the late 90s. It is now like
2020s.
We're now in the 2020s, and I've been over Goldberg for a long time now. And it's like, all right, like I don't need him to win any more world titles. Him beating the Fiend was just atrocious. So many problems that I had. The match with Brock at Mania was fine, but it shouldn't have had the title. It just, so at the end of the day, it's like, I'm kind of done with that. Do I think that Goldberg could have gotten a better send off though? Because it is Goldberg. Yes. Mm-hmm. But anyway, enough about our thoughts on it, DJ. Let's hear Goldberg's thoughts on his retirement, shall we?
Wait, is this after Saturday Night Main Event?
This was, yes. This was on Ariel Helwani's show. Oh yeah. Hold yes. on. Yeah. Hang on. Let me pull this up here.
Emotions here about everything that it's something that you're not quite sure how to feel about in the immediate aftermath. Is that accurate?
Let's just say I'm pissed off at the way I went out. You know, I mean, because it was, I put so much into it and I don't feel as though the effort was reciprocated to put a stamp on, you know, what I accomplished. I'm not going to say that I'm not ecstatic about the opportunity that I got, but you know, I was a WCW guy, man. I don't know, man. I think it could be done. Could have been done a little bit differently. That's all. And I'm.
Whoa, hold on. You're telling me that Triple H booked a WCW talent to have a terrible retirement? That doesn't sound like something he would do. The guy that brought in all those WCW guys in the early 2000s and beat them all in his reign of terror. That doesn't sound right. Something's off here. There's no way.
There's no way Triple H would do it, you know, because he's got the great booking, apparently.
No, there's no way. There's no way. So, yeah, when it comes to this Goldberg thing, it's like, okay, did he need to beat Gunther? No, and he shouldn't have. And that was 100% the right call of Gunther winning. The very least, you could have given the man a retirement speech. Like, let the man just, like, go off and say his thing. Have him, like, have that one last goodbye and go off into the sunset. But unfortunately, and at the very least, right, like, if you run out of time, just have him come back on Raw and do something. Like, yeah. Book him for another appearance and be like, okay, guys, hey, sorry, I didn't have a chance to do this, you know, on TV for everybody because we ran out of time. Like, I just want to thank everybody, thank the fans, thank WWE, all the nonsense, whatever, and just go about it that way. But they were never gonna follow through with that.
No, they weren't, because, you know, WWE's got their own agenda.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah. There was another thing too. Goldberg really went off as well. I'm not going to pull this up. I have the quote here. It was him talking about Asuka and that undefeated streak that she had. Yeah, yep. This one I could have gone without Goldberg saying, but he's like, that happened after I got there. A girl beat my undefeated streak. I can't even remember what's her name. Asuka is her name. Literally, he pronounced Asuka's name Ahsoka, but just long-winded. And yeah. He goes, some Japanese girl, they touted her as being the one to have the longest winning streak. It just so happened that it culminated when I got there. Then it just so happened that every single wrestler used the spear in their moveset. Pretty ironic that happened when I got there, he said.
All I'm going to say is that you know, I wish he could have ended on good terms, but, you know, it is what it is at the end of the day. But all I'm going to say is that it didn't surprise me one bit of what went down. It didn't surprise me of how it booked. That's really all I have to say.
And now we're going to talk about our top five favorite wrestling factions of all time. As you guys know, as me and DJ like to do these lists, we'll go each through our number five, then to our number four, so on and so forth. So how do you want to do this today, DJ? Do you want to start or should I?
I think you started last time, so I'll start out this one.
Okay, I can never. You've got a better memory at that than I do. So yeah, if you want to start out, go on ahead.
All right. So this was a hard list to come up with, you know, because there's been many good factions throughout the years. But I'm going to go back to, you know, before I started getting into pro wrestling, I'm going with Evolution. I enjoyed watching that group when I started watching their highlights, you know, like you couldn't go wrong with the game, Triple H, Batista, Randy Orton, and Ric Flair. Like, seriously, that was a bunch of good guys together, and like it got Randy Orton to become a star, and they were just awesome finding the Shield, you know. They were getting the Shield over. They deserved to be on my list. They were very good.
It helped make Batista, for sure.
Oh, I think it made Batista.
Randy Orton, I think...
He was an upcomer.
Randy Orton was an up-and-comer, but it was interesting with Orton because they turned him babyface. They made him the youngest world champion, but like he didn't really do anything with it. They gave it right back to Triple H. And then not long after that, Randy Orton's a heel again going into that, whatever that next WrestleMania was against The Undertaker. So I think in that regard, like Randy still, you know, probably in their minds still had some work to do or whatever. But yeah, man, you look at that group and like all the talent that were involved there. And yeah, you can't go wrong with Evolution.
You could not go wrong. A lot of world champions right there.
So with my number five, I'm going to be taking a completely different route than you are. We're going to be taking a trip over to TNA wrestling.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
I started watching this faction. Like I started watching TNA around the time that this faction started, and that was the Aces and Eights.
That
was one of the big things. Like when I was started watching TNA, I was like, oh, this is an interesting thing. Like all these masked guys, like meeting everybody up, who do they work for? What are they doing? And like, you know, as I became familiar with more of the characters and the wrestlers that were in TNA, I got more invested in them. And then I got invested in the Aces and Eights story. They were a bunch of like beer drinking biker gang guys. So
yeah, they were.
Everyone was kind of thinking the same thing of like, wait a second, James Storm, are you the leader? But then they started making it really obvious that he wasn't the leader, because like Aces and Eights would come out during his matches and be like, hey, dude, like thumbs up, James Storm, good job. And he's sitting there like, what the you all doing right now? I don't need your help. And it's like, okay, yeah, I don't think it's James Storm that's actually the leader. When they do reveal the leader in the lockdown cage match between
Brother, that was the best moment of TNA right there.
Dude, I don't know if that was... It's definitely, I think, one of the top TNA moments right there is like Bully Ray revealing himself as the president of Aces and Eights, and he becomes the world champion. Oh, dude, it was such a good angle. It was such a great angle. Oh, go on.
Oh, they never recovered after Bubba Ray lost the title. I will say that.
I think, see, the thing with me, like, because I watched TNA from, I think, like 2012 to about, oh gosh, it would have been like 2015, I think. So I watched it for about 3 years, like, you know, consistently. And I think the Aces and Eights storyline, I feel like after Bully Ray was revealed as the leader, is kind of when it all started going downhill. Like everything in the lead up to that and Bully revealing himself as the leader was perfect. And then I think everything after that was kind of downhill, because there was already like, oh, the dissension of the Aces and Eights and like them losing members. And then it eventually leads to AJ Styles winning the championship at Bound for Glory against Bully. And yeah, from there, it was kind of like, all right, well, the Aces and Eights, like it's all kind of just downhill from here. But everything in that buildup, man, with that faction was so good.
Yeah, man, you can't go wrong there, because that was a good faction. Funny enough, they're on my list, but they're a bit higher than where you put them at. So
we'll
get to that later. So,
sure.
Oh my gosh, man, this is a good conversation already. So my number four, they're a bit lower than where I wanted them to be, but I had to make room for some other factions. The Shield, man. You can never go wrong with the Shield, man.
Okay.
If you think of it, it's three unknown guys at first with Roman, Seth, and Ambrose. But then as the years go on, they become the biggest stars and the biggest, like, captains for WWE right now. Like, look at the Tribal Chief now. Look at the Architect. And he may not be in WWE, but he sure is the best guy in AEW right now. Jon Moxley with the Death Riders. Like, if it wasn't for the Shield, you probably don't have all three of these guys where they are right now, if I'm being honest here. If there's no Shield, there's no Tribal Chief, there's no Architect, and there's no, you know, Death Riders, Jon Moxley, because the Shield helped build each one up, and not only that, they took the whole entertainment area by storm. Like, they took WWE by storm, they took the fans by storm. Like, before Seth Rollins betrayed them, that was prime Shield right there. You can say this and that, you know, when they faced The Miz and The Bar, and then, you know, their last match with Moxley before he left for AEW. Before Rollins betrayed them, that was prime Shield, and that was why they're on my list. Because prime Shield, you can never go wrong with them. Them versus the Wyatts and Evolution was the best Shield right there.
That was actually, like, yeah, that, dude, I don't think I could have done any better than what you just did. You nailed it. Like, yeah, that, and I honestly, like, you know, the Shield may or may not be on my list as well, so I might kind of reserve my thoughts for that as well. But you had a perfect explanation for why the Shield is such a great faction. So thank I don't, you. Yeah, I'm going to get into my number four now, which I think I took another completely different route from you on this one.
It's all
and
right.
Yeah, that's why we got these lists, right? Like, we all going to have different opinions and we're all going to, you know, have different thoughts. So my number four is the NWO.
Mm-hmm.
The new world order. We spent a little bit of time talking about them in the last episode when we were talking about the greatest heel turns of all time with, like, Hulk Hogan and him forming the NWO. That was a group of, like, just main event guys. Now, here's the thing. When you're watching the week-to-week TV, NWO ain't all that great or whatever. Like, some of the storylines, it's not always that great. But one of the things that I've really enjoyed, especially getting through like 98 right now, is very specifically not the NWO Black and White, but the NWO Wolfpack and that faction forming. Because first of all, like, the players involved in that with, like, Kevin Nash, Conan, and then they bring in, like, Lex Luger, they bring in Sting, and I'm like, this is the coolest group of mother effers right here, these guys. And then they get their new theme song, which has honestly become one of my favorite theme songs in all of wrestling. I love the Wolfpack theme. It's so good. I don't know how people don't talk about that theme when they talk about, like, their favorite wrestling themes, because, like, that's how amazing it is. And I was like, dude, this faction is so cool, and the red and black, and, like, dude, like, I didn't really vibe too much with, like, the black and white NWO, but I am vibing with the Wolfpack. You know, don't turn your back on the Wolfpack, as the song says. I love it. So, yeah, if I'm going to put NWO, maybe I should put more specifically, like, the Wolfpack. You know, mm-hmm. They were cool.
Oh, yeah, I respect that. All right, moving on to number three now. I can't leave him out there. You know, I'm a big fan of this guy. I have to go with the early days of AEW, and I'm still sad they're not around today. The Inner Circle, man. Give me a hand.
I'm not giving you a hand on that one.
Oh, I'm giving myself a hand then.
All right, anyways, good for you.
So I'm putting the Inner Circle at three because, you know, I love Chris Jericho, you know. He builds people up. You may disagree with me here, but he builds people up. He built Santana Ortiz up. He built Sammy Guevara, even though that's going to be a whole different discussion for another day. And yes, I do agree he could have been better. And then, you know, he built
Were we banger. Watching the same TV, DJ? Were we watching the same thing? Okay.
Hey, he took Sammy under his wing, you know?
Okay.
Hey, him and Sammy almost won the tag titles, don't forget.
If you want to make an argument for Sammy, we could maybe make an argument for that. But I don't know what he did for the careers of Santana and Ortiz.
Well, the reason why I put the Inner Circle up there was when... The main thing for me is because when Jericho became champion, that's when he had the whole group surrounding him, you know, making a shield. You know, he had the list of Jericho, whatever, the clipboard of, like, people that did bad things to him, whatever, like Moxley.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
And not gonna lie, man, those shirts were some of the coolest six shirts I've ever saw. So, you know, I wanted to be part of the Inner Circle, even though I wasn't, sadly. And, you know, they were just, you know, guys that, you know, followed Jericho. They came out to his son, which was very cool, Judas. But, like, they had a good match at Stadium Stampede. They were the heels, you know, like, oh, my gosh. Remember when they wiped out Nick Jackson's leg before COVID?
Yeah, yeah, I do recall that.
Like, bro, that was pretty good for the Inner Circle, because before COVID came and all that, they were building up this, like, big Stadium Stampede match or whatever.
Yeah.
And they took one of the Young Bucks out at the time, and I'm just like, okay, I could get behind them. Yes, they lost, of course, but, like, you gotta admit, man, yes, Jericho didn't do much with that group, but he built up Daniel Garcia, he built up Anna Jay and his new Inner Circle. Like, Jericho had a decent amount of people to build up at the time, and yes, you could be like, what did he do with Sammy and all that, but, like, he got him to get to his wife, Ty Mello.
I don't know about that. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But
nothing, but she was in this Inner Circle, technically.
Was she?
Yeah, she was, man. She was in the Inner Circle for a bit.
Maybe I don't remember, but okay.
Because once Sammy became TNT champion, that's when, you know, we started having those scenes and all that.
Okay. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. Yep. Yeah, I forgot that was, yeah. I didn't realize they were part of the Inner Circle at that time.
Because Anna Jay and Ty Mello were in there, along with Garcia, and then...
Oh, you're talking about the Jericho Appreciation Society, I think.
Yeah, I am, but there's...
Which I guess is... Yeah, I guess it is Inner Circle 2.0. So, yeah, all right. You know what? We'll count it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And who can forget about Dan Lambert, you know?
Okay. Yeah, I don't really have much to comment on about that, other than the fact that the first Stadium Stampede match was great. For my number three, I actually, to be honest, I couldn't believe I put this faction... on there, because, like, it's not that I've been watching WWE a lot while this faction was going through its stuff, but I do recall watching a lot of their segments because it was, like, one of the things that I was invested in, so I'd go and I'd look up bits on YouTube, you know, the stuff that I care about, that I'm curious about, and that faction is the Bloodline. You know what? We can sit here and say, like, oh, this faction built up this person, or this person built up that, you know, this person. Roman Reigns managed to, it took a while, but within 4 years, the man elevated several people into becoming prime players in WWE today. Mm-hmm. People like Sami Zayn, people like Jey Uso. I would have said Solo Sikoa, but I feel like Solo has kind of fallen down from grace a little bit, but they were getting somewhere with Solo for a little bit until they weren't. But you look at Sammy and Jay specifically, and freaking Jay, man, look, man, freaking won the world championship at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen without the Bloodline story.
Nope.
Sami Zayn beats Gunther for the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania. He wins the tag team titles with Kevin Owens in the main event of a WrestleMania. I don't think any of that stuff happens without the Bloodline story. Mm-hmm. And Roman's 4-year-long reign on top. Does it mean that everything was good? No. And I think people have tended to rewrite history in saying that the Bloodline story was perfect from start to finish. It wasn't, because there were a lot of down periods in the middle of those 4 years. I remember when they started the Brock Lesnar feud, it felt like the Bloodline story just stopped, and it was all about Roman and Brock at WrestleMania and nothing else. There were a lot of down periods where Roman wasn't on TV, and hence why the Bloodline story would kind of not be where it should be. So it wasn't perfect, but when you look at it in the long run, it set out to do something that not only made for some compelling TV, but elevated new stars to a higher level.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you there, man. Nothing could go wrong there. Funny enough, I took a different angle with another faction today that is somewhat, they're in a, you know, that kind of phase where you don't know what to do with them because, you know, some of their stars are hurt. But I went with the Judgment Day. Now, I'm going to be picky here because, yes, there's the Judgment Day with Liv Morgan, but that's not why I put them at two. I'm putting the early Judgment Day, you know, like after Adam Copeland found them and they had Finn Balor, Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, and, you know, Dirty Dom.
Mm. Yeah.
That was probably the most dominant Judgment Day will ever be. I'm sorry, Roxanne Perez. That Judgment Day is not going to reach to that standard that the old OG Judgment Day did.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, you know, Dirty Dom actually won a title. Wait, no, he's Intercontinental Champion today, but what they're doing with him is so crappy, you know, like, oh, he's hurt. Oh, getting off topic here, did you see what AJ Styles did to get a match with Dirty Dom?
No, I didn't.
He was literally praying out in the backstage to the Lord, you know, being like, I just want a match with Dom. I want a match with Dom.
All right, that's pretty funny.
It was, but at the same time, I'm annoyed because, you know, AJ deserves better, but, sure. You know, that's every superstar.
You know, now that we're talking about AJ Styles, he's supposed to be showing up at the TNA Slammiversary show that's coming up. Mm-hmm. I think that it'll probably already be done by the time this goes out, but, like, yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah, AJ, he's a man, but, yeah, the OG Judgment Day, you have Rhea Ripley, you know, who's getting into, you know, her identity, and she became a champion, and next thing you know, she's, like, over, and now she's, like, one of the bigger superstars today in the WWE.
She's the most over women's star in the entire company, and arguably you could make a case for her being one of the top stars, period, between men and women.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You see her on the covers, you see her on the posters. Like, if there's no Judgment Day, there is no... you know, mommy Rhea Ripley today. There is no.
I think you actually might have a point.
Oh yeah, and then look what happened to Damian Priest too. Like, you know, he was a somebody in NXT, but you know, he wasn't like Judgment Day Damian Priest. You know, when he became a champion. Now, yes, you know, is he hurt right now, or I don't know what's going on with him.
I haven't been following too much. I don't know. The last I remember Damian Priest is he was in a feud with Drew McIntyre. Yeah. I don't know what else he's been doing since.
Priest has, you know, fallen off since, you know, the Judgment Day betrayed him with Liv Morgan and all that. But at that time, that was prime Priest right there because, you know, he comes in with his new faction and he became champion. That was, you know.
Yeah, he cashed in at WrestleMania, right? He cashed in Money in the Bank.
Because, you know, that's when Punk and McIntyre was still going on.
Yeah, that's right. Punk yeah, dude. Fear. Yeah, Priest. Yeah, Priest was another one of those guys that got elevated because of the Judgment Day. Yeah.
Without Judgment Day, there is no good Priest because, you know, he was a somebody in NXT like Rhea Ripley, but he didn't get over until Judgment Day.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And then, you know, there's Dirty Dom, you know, where you have the upcomer where he's actually getting a build-up here, you know, with his group. And I'm going to say this one time only. I wish I was him in real life, man. I wish I was him. That's all I'm going to say.
He's a lucky guy.
He's a very lucky guy, but... you can't deny, man. He's got some of the best promos, you know, getting booed every time and speaking in Spanish. Like, the dude's going to be a star in the years to come, but it was nice to have that newcomer come in there. And then there's Finn Balor. You had to have a leader, and I'm not going to say much because, yes, Balor was somewhat of a champ, but Balor was a leader. You know, he was the one leading these guys into, you know, glory days. And honestly, that was not bad for him at this point in his career. So, yeah. The OG Judgment Day, you can never go wrong with them.
For sure. Well, for my number two, I've gone with a faction that you already went with on your list, and that's the Shield. And honestly, I don't even know what more I can say to kind of like echo your sentiment about the Shield, because it's really basically what everything that you said is completely accurate. These guys came in, and it was like, well, they're the three nobodies. Like, nobody knows who these guys are. And then fast forward how many years later, and they're all top stars in the wrestling business. Like, you look at what Roman Reigns has done with the tribal chief character and him having the 4-year-long title run. You've got Seth Rollins, who's always been a prominent figure in WWE, always been one of the top stars there. And then you've got John Moxley, who left WWE to make a name for himself outside of it and became one of the top stars, not just in AEW, but he became a top star in New Japan as well. And dude has been having just like the run of a lifetime right now. Like, you know, last year he held both the IWGP championship, and then after he lost that, he won the AEW World Championship, had the, you know, Death Rider story go through there up till All In, which we just had not too long ago. John Moxley's doing very well for himself. And on top of that, too, he's always been the guy. I feel like I've said it so many times on here as well. He was the break glass in case of emergency guy in AEW. What happens when Punk goes down with injury? Oh, put the belt on Mox. CM Punk gets suspended. What do? Put the belt on Mox. Almost like a lot of these problems revolve around Punk, but I digress. So yeah, it's like at the end of the day, the Shield, all three members, very, very successful, not just as a group, but as individuals as well.
Oh, you can never go wrong with the Shield. I'm just going to say this one time like I did with other groups and with them earlier. Without the Shield, you don't even hear these guys today the way they are. Without the Shield, they are not the stars they are today.
Yeah. And what other guys, DJ, do you bring out of NXT? Because, I mean, how many times do we say guys that come up from NXT deserve to get pushed better, and they don't, and they just fall into obscurity? These three guys were protected from day one, and they were allowed to thrive and not lose and look like a dominant threat. And it worked to perfection.
Take notes, management. That is how, you know, you protect your NXT stars and build them up to become main event stars. Hint, hint.
Yeah, for real.
Oh, yeah. So I don't have much to say for my number one because you covered it earlier, but...
Wait, weren't you on your number...
Yeah, I did number two.
You did your number two. Okay, so you're number one. Okay.
I don't need to talk much about my one. All I'm going to say is, man, I wish I was part of that game. The Aces and Eights,
yeah. Shout out Aces and Eights.
The Dead Man's Hand. Shout out to their theme song, because whenever I heard that song, I'm like, yep, I want to be part of that game, you know? I don't care. I just want to wear one of those leather jackets, you know, get on a motorcycle and be part of that game, man, because they took TNA by storm. Let's admit it. They took TNA by storm when they came. One of my highlight moments watching their YouTube video from start to finish was, you know, when Taz, you know, got like, you know, he, like, you know, took his coat off and wore an Aces and Eights jacket. Yep, I'm going there.
I love that angle. Yes, the Brooke Hogan and Bully Ray wedding. He's like, all right, is it just me or is it getting hot in here? I love that.
Oh, and another, I was going right there too. Brother, that was genius to get Bully Ray to marry Brooke Hogan, man. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Watching Hulk Hogan just be, you know, Hulk Hogan, that was the funniest stuff I've ever seen in pro wrestling, man.
Dude, and then the lockdown cage angle and stuff too. Oh my gosh.
Let me just say, man, that was one of the reasons why I enjoyed watching pro wrestling. When I saw that highlight of, you know, Hogan being, not Hogan, Bully Ray being like, I am the president of Aces and Eights. I'm just like, thank you. This is why I love this group. I'm so sad they're not around today because, bro, when he came in, that was so awesome, man.
Ugh. I remember thinking, because when they, I'm trying to think back. I remember Bully Ray was trying to pit the Aces and Eights like James Gunn was the leader, and he started accusing James Storm of being the lead. I don't know if I said James Gunn. I meant James Storm.
Yeah,
two completely different Jameses.
Oh, yeah.
When he accused James Storm of being the leader, and I remember like, oh, now I feel like you're kind of the leader, Bully Ray.
I felt like that. The build,
but then. To their credit, he then made me think that he wasn't the leader because he started becoming more of like a baby face, like a top baby face that would, like, you know, fight off the Aces and Eights or whatever and would chase them out of the building and stuff.
If you think of it, that's literally like the Shield versus Authority, you know? You have Cena versus and his guys versus the Authority, but then at SummerSlam, Survivor Series, Big Show betrays him and, you know, is back with the Authority. That's how it felt like with, you know, Bully Ray, you know, trying to be with Hulk Hogan, even though Hogan doesn't like him. And then all of a sudden in the cage match, he becomes the president.
Yeah, he has to win over Hogan's trust in order to, like, you know, get to the point where he marries Brooke Hogan.
And it was so funny, too, because, you know, Hogan saw his daughter and Bully making out and, you know, the back and all that. And then Brooke is like, I love him, though, Dad. And he's like, no, you are not allowed to see that man again.
Did you just call him Mark? I remember that, too.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was
Oh, my gosh.
That was, and, like, just seeing the buildup, and then at the point, you know, when Bully Ray is champion, and, you know, him and Brooke, you know, like, just disagreeing with each other about trying to get a divorce, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You can never argue with Bully Ray there. Like, he was one of the bread and butters in Aces and Eights.
Dude, Bully Ray, yeah, Bully Ray at that time was like such a crucial part to TNA. And then I remember, like, after the Aces and Eights run, he went away for a little bit And then he came back and he became like this monster babyface, almost like this Stone Cold Steve Austin sort of babyface that would go up against the establishment, like against Dixie Carter. And the people, including me at the time too, we were like all for Bully Ray as like the top guy. It was like, yeah, we want Bully Ray to do this. Like, we want him to put Dixie Carter through a table. And honestly, for me, that's one of my favorite TNA moments ever, is Bully putting Dixie through the table, because that was like such a big story that went on for months at the time. And that eventual payoff was just like such this satisfying moment. You love to see it.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, I couldn't argue with Aces and Eights as my number one, because that was a bad boy group, Motorcycle Gang, that took over TNA at the time.
Yeah, for sure. So then in that case, going into my number one, this is a faction that has had many different variations over the years, but is one that is widely known throughout the world, and one of the reasons why I think things like Ring of Honor and New Japan started picking up in popularity. And it's definitely a reason why I started tuning in. And that is none other than the Bullet Club. Too sweet.
Too sweet. Gosh.
I know that's an NWO thing too, but bear with me.
I love that group.
And I'm talking, when I talk about Bullet Club, I got to specifically talk about the Elite variant of it. So we're talking like Kenny Omega, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, Marty Scurll for a little bit, Hangman Page, like that part of Bullet Club that would eventually become the Elite. And the reason why we have to talk about that, and I kind of alluded to it before, those guys did something that not many other people were really able to do, and that is create a crap ton of buzz outside of WWE that made everyone look at them and go, huh, this is curious. What's this? This is interesting.
And just for you fans out there too, read the Young Bucks book. It will explain more about this.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And these guys freaking sold out at the time, like a, what was it, like a 10,000 seat arena when Dave Meltzer said they couldn't do it.
Oh,
and they did it.
Well, who cares about his opinions? I'm sorry.
Well, regardless of his opinions or not, they did it. The Elite said, all right, bet that, we'll do it. And they freaking did. Them doing that would lead into the birth of the second biggest wrestling company in the world today, All Elite Wrestling. How can you argue the success that the Elite has had? It speaks for itself. I don't even think I can say anything else. Like, it all speaks for itself.
If we're being honest here, what other faction can say that they started another pro company? Like, what other faction can say it?
Yeah. Well, I remember too with like with NWO, I know Eric Bischoff has said before that he wanted to do like NWO Nitro was like the direction that they wanted to go. But they did do an episode of NWO Nitro. It sucked. And I can tell you that as somebody that watched it, it was one of the times during their run where they were kicking WWE's butt, where WWE almost beat them, because that's how little it seemed people actually cared about NWO Nitro. Because people didn't care about NWO having their own show. It was just more of like, okay, this is a cool faction, but like, let's just kind of leave it there. But like this Elite group, they did it. They created their own wrestling show with the financial backing of Tony Khan, of course, but like they did it.
You cannot argue with the results, man. That is how you start a faction in a pro wrestling company right there. I'll give you a hand.
For real. Yeah. Hand for the Elite. Hand for the Elite. Yeah, so that's our top five factions right there. I think we both had pretty good lists.
I agree. I love doing that stuff, man. This was probably one of the best discussions we've had.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you guys are going to have to let us know if you're watching this on YouTube. You're going to have to let us know in the comments below what your favorite factions of all time are, because obviously I'm sure everyone's lists are going to be different. But yeah, I believe that is going to wrap us up for today, DJ.
Stay safe, guys. It's a crazy world out there, and spread the word to your friends, family, and neighbors, please, and thank you.
And as always, we appreciate you guys watching. If you're watching on YouTube, like and subscribe and share the video to help support the podcast, and we'll see you guys later.